It's Eastern Standard on WEKU, a broadcast service of Eastern Kentucky University, produced with the support of 1, the Alltech Ideas Conference, and Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin, and in this hour...
My drug dealer was a doctor, doctor, had the plug from Big Pharma, Pharma. He said that he would heal me, but he only gave me problems, problems. My drug dealer was a doctor, doctor, had the plug from Big Pharma, Pharma. I think you're trying to kill me, tried to kill me for...
Overdoses killed more than 70,000 Americans in 2017. It's the latest full year count by the Centers for Disease Control, and it's the highest drug overdose death rate in the world. Nowhere has it been worse than in the Ohio Valley. West Virginia had the nation's highest rate of fatal drug overdoses. Ohio was second, Kentucky fifth. Two-thirds of the deaths are attributable to opioids, especially synthetic opioids, the ones known as fentanyls, which are up to 50 times more powerful than heroin. Overdose deaths linked to fentanyls leaped 45% from 2013 to 2017. At first blush, it might seem odd to hear that opioid prescriptions have been falling while death rates from overdoses are rising. How can that be? Well, the New York Times offers an explanation. Synthetic drugs tend to be more deadly than prescription pills and heroin for two main reasons. They are usually more potent, meaning small errors in measurement can lead to an overdose. And the blends of synthetic drugs also tend to change frequently, making it easy to underestimate the strength. You can trace this back to the mid-90s when the pharmaceutical industry began marketing legal narcotics, particularly OxyContin, to treat everyday pain. This slow-release opioid was aggressively and reassuringly promoted to doctors. It was doled out like a super aspirin, and it turned out to be highly addictive. What has resulted has been, is, a public health tragedy, and it has led to a spate of lawsuits against drug makers and distributors.
A little background.
Wesley Duke is Assistant Director of the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit in the Office of the Kentucky Attorney General. The AG has filed lawsuits against 9 pharmaceutical companies and distributors.
We've alleged, well, first of all, violations of the Kentucky Medicaid fraud statutes, that they have caused fraudulent claims to be made to the Kentucky Medicaid program. We've also alleged violations of the Consumer Protection Act because they made representations to the public and to physicians that these drugs were safe.
Duke was interviewed for the BBC documentary series Everyday American.
This was a systemic issue, you know, all the way from the manufacturer all the way to the physician down the line, there were problems. We're seeking financial damages. So this is a case about money. And, you know, and of course, there'll never be enough money to fix all the damage that was caused. You know, that's just a fact. But we're talking a significant sum of money that will go to address the problem.
They do need to go to prison.
Also interviewed by the BBC, Emily Walden of Louisville, whose son TJ died of an opioid overdose at the age of 22.
I would like to see the Federal Department of Justice file criminal charges against these companies and their executives for what they have done.
The lawsuits filed by Kentucky are all civil.
The cases we've discussed today are civil actions, not criminal. You would have to prove, you know, criminal liability, and you'd have to know that the executives were aware. That possibly could exist, but as far as these cases here today are civil, and I don't want to say that there could not be criminal liability because it could potentially exist, but we've not gotten that far yet here.
Companies being sued by Kentucky include Arizona-based Insys Therapeutics. A former Insys opioid sales executive recently admitted in Boston federal court to having a role in a nationwide conspiracy to bribe doctors to prescribe a highly addictive fentanyl spray for people who didn't need it. In a plea deal, the former sales exec is now cooperating with prosecutors who are targeting his Insys co-workers. The company's billionaire founder, John Kapoor, and other high-level executives go on trial in January. In Kentucky, as in many other parts of the country, opioid addiction is tearing apart families. Information from Kentucky Youth Advocates tells us that 9% of Kentucky children are being raised by a non-parental relative. It's known as kinship care. It's the highest statewide rate in the nation, with the number of Kentucky children raised by relatives nearly doubling in recent years to 96,000. If these kids were gathered together as a city, it would be bigger than Owensboro or Bowling Green.
We are drowning in this, in the opioid crisis, in the drug crisis, the numbers of children in foster care, the numbers of children in relative care.
Lucinda Masterton is a Fayette County family court judge.
Statewide, most judges will estimate that 90% of their caseload is directly or indirectly because of abuse of drugs. What that means, just to put it in perspective, we have 9 circuit court judges in Fayette County, 4 are family, 5 are general civil criminal. If we didn't have drugs in our community, we wouldn't have had to move out of the old courthouse. We could have 1 or 2 circuit court judges and they would handle everything.
The state figures that I've seen show that most of Kentucky's overdose deaths are among people ages 35 to 44, followed by 45 to 54. And those are key child-rearing years. What's the impact?
The impact is enormous on a bunch of levels. It means that our numbers of people whose children are removed or put in foster care or are put in relative custody are skyrocketing. In 2011, the number of children in foster care in Kentucky, as in pretty much in the whole country, was trending downward. In that year, in 2011, we had 6,600 kids in foster care, and it was getting better. Each year, it was going down by several hundred.
And that's in Kentucky.
And that's in Kentucky. And it was trending down nationwide as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opioid crisis hit. And we currently in Kentucky, as of September, have 9,600 children in foster care. Now, that's not even talking about the multiple thousands of children who are in relative custody, either with actual relatives or who are people who are called fictive kin. This is like Aunt Sally down the street who fed you cookies and loves you and mm-hmm. can take you into her house. So we are 3,000 or one-third more children in foster care today than we had in 2011.
Is our foster care system able to handle this?
No. The short answer is no. We don't have enough resources for families to keep these children. You know, when you're talking about a family taking in a baby or a toddler, suddenly they have to fit daycare into their budget and more food and whatever.
It's families a lot to take on.
It is. And families can't do it. And we have problems finding resources for them. And we have problems finding people who are equipped to be foster parents. It's a constant struggle.
I've heard that there are some communities in this state, perhaps concentrated in the eastern part of the state, that have lost their young generation.
It's really devastating, some of the communities in eastern Kentucky. In some of these counties, basically 2 generations are disappearing. You have the childbearing people dying or moving away. I mean, these are the problems of a distressed economy, the people moving away because they can't get jobs. So that's part of it. But of the people who are staying, the despair leads to drug addiction. And then the parents are dying or not able to survive in the community. And the children, when they're born, we can't find foster care for them in those communities. And so if they're being removed, they're being sent to Fayette County or someplace else. So what's happening is we're losing the childbearing generation. We're also losing the children in those counties. Just absolutely devastating.
I understand that all states now have laws on the books that require child welfare agencies to make reasonable efforts to reunify parents with their children, but parents often relapse. So it just compounds the trauma for the children. It sounds like a very vicious cycle.
it's a terrible cycle. We're talking about addiction here. And I think there's a lot of public misconception about addiction. We finally are on the verge of having the general public understand that this is a disease that needs to be treated the same way as diabetes or any other disease. And we have to figure out a compassionate way to do it.
We've seen lately statistics showing such a spike in Kentucky in particular, in grandparents primarily who are taking care of their children's children. What does that look like in your courtroom? Do you see a lot of cases come to you that involve kinship care?
The vast majority. We don't have the resources to put all these kids in foster care, nor would we want to, even if we did. So we really rely on grandparents and people in that generation, aunties and so forth, to take these children. We also have had some innovation recently where the legislature has just recently authorized placement with fictive kin, which I talked about a little bit earlier. The big challenge for those families is being able to afford to take the children in. And a number of years ago, the cabinet stopped funding supports for kinship families. We're sort of in flux in terms of how that is funded. There's some litigation going on about it. But what we are seeing now is that I think Kentucky is moving a little bit in the direction of other states where they are asking grandparents to take foster care classes or take an abbreviated version so they kind of know what they're dealing with. It's not a perfect solution to have a grandmother raise a baby to adulthood because a baby is placed with a 70-year-old. Mm-hmm. She's going to struggle when she's 85 and that kid is 15. And so we're really looking for people to work out family systems for kinship care too.
Do you see in your courtroom a lot of grandparents who are in their 60s and their 70s that really had reached a point in their lives where they were kind of done raising children and have no choice? It must make for a very uncomfortable situation all around.
It's very uncomfortable, and the difficulty, I'm a grandmother, and I have wonderful grandkids, that's what every grandparent says, but I cannot imagine being in a situation where I had full-time care of my grandchildren, and people aren't equipped for this. When you're a retirement age, you aren't equipped to take on a small child. So what we look for in those cases is maybe there are other people in the family who can fill in the gap a little bit, provide respite care, provide other kinds of assistance. But it is a really not good situation to have grandparents raising children suddenly. We're getting better about it in Kentucky, about getting more supports for these grandparents, and some of it is financial, but a lot of it is just training. You know, the kids are different today than they were when my daughter was a teenager.
We're just about out of time, but on the policy side, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you like to see policymakers do about this situation?
Well, I think the main thing is to approach opioid addiction as a disease. We are chasing the numbers in this. Earlier this year, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, were reporting that there were 59,000 overdose deaths in the United States last year. Their current number for 2017 is 72,000. That is the equivalent of a plane crash every single day in this country. Can you imagine if we had a plane crashing every single day, the uproar in this country? And so we have to change our view about this. And the first way we change our view is to recognize that this is a disease that needs to be treated, that people who are addicts do not choose to be. Nobody wakes up one morning and thinks, oh, I just decide I'm going to be an addict today. That isn't how it works.
Fayette County Family Court Judge Lucinda Masterton, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hear the rattle and the holler, that ain't no snake. Hear the rattle and the holler, that ain't no snake.
white coat man with the pills to take. The white coat man with the pills to take. Yeah, baby, cry, mama, no fool for me. Yeah, baby, cry, mama, no fool for me. She gave her money to the man at the pharmacy. The money to the man at the pharmacy. Yeah, things in the holler, they ain't the same. People in the holler can't stand the pain. You used to owe it to the company store. Now the white coat man gonna own your soul. Yeah, the white coat man gonna own your soul.
Coming up after a short break, there is a little good news, but we have some more very rough road to travel before we get there. For instance, crystal meth is back. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.